season of the One Board podcast is brought to you by Bellwether Games. Discover joy when you play one of their expanding lineup of fun and diverse games. Bellwether Games are both high quality and enjoyable for the whole family. Visit bellwethergames.com to explore all their titles and find a new addition for your collection today.
Hello, podcast audience, and welcome to another episode of One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and joined as always is a man. Joining me as always is a man who is sick as a dog today, Ryan Gutowski. How are you, Ryan?
That's true. I got so sick that I grew a tail. I've got big floppy ears. I started barking in my sleep when I dream. It's really.
Do you do the like running thing? Like your legs move like you're running.
Yeah, like I'm doggy paddling in my sleep. It looks really cute. My wife was just telling me how cute I look when
I do. I hope she filmed it and put it on Instagram.
I hope so, too. So good.
Yeah, Ryan, I'm sorry you're not feeling well today, man. That stinks.
All good.
So maybe we'll use up all the energy that you have left in your body for this podcast, and then you can go pass out.
That's true. So, podcast audience, I'm going to use everything I've got for this audience, so it'll be just above mediocre, and then I will pass out.
Well, in the last episode, I was eating while we recorded, so why not, you know, you nap while we record? I don't see how that's
I was able
different.
To take out a lot of the chewing, which was really good for our podcast listeners' ears. I noticed how much chewing there was when I put headphones on. I was like, wow, this is going to really set some people off, so I'll just knock out this chewing.
Yeah, well, I just try to give you something to do is really what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I usually don't have enough going on, so editing your chewing noises.
So you're welcome is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, back-to-back episodes, you were chewing in the last episode, so I'll be sniffling in this episode, so hopefully we get enough unsubscribes to really damage the show.
Hooray! Well, enough about our body noises. Today we've got a great episode with some Game Doctor, with some interview, and then we always start, Ryan, with talking about what we're playing. So, Ryan, what has been hitting the table for you in this past week?
Well, I haven't been able to play very much just because of being sick and my work schedule, but we did finish up our fourth season in the Formula D League at work. So I ended up placing, I think, sixth place, I think, overall. Sixth out of 11. So, but the interesting thing is Chris and Adam, two of my coworkers, they actually placed first and second. They were actually first and second last season, but they flip-flopped. Chris took first place this year. Adam took second place, and I think it was only decided by 2 points.
Nice.
So it was really good. Really good league. We had a lot of fun. I've got to figure out a new scoring system, I think, as people have been added. Mm-hmm. I think I want to figure out a different way to score each weekly race, because I don't know. I think it's hard to come back if you have a couple losses. I think it's really difficult to make a comeback. So I've got to figure out how that works. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, today was really cool. It's the weekend, and my daughter looks at me and she said, "Daddy, I just want to play games with you all day." And I was like, "What?" So that was really special to me. I was super pumped about that. So she sat down and played the game Filler with us. A friend of mine came over and we played Filler, the prototype. Filler is on Kickstarter currently. It's a pastry filling game. And actually, we'll be talking to Jason Katorski of Green Couch Games later in the show. But this game is really cool. It's really, really a cute game. I love the mechanics of having to figure out what time everybody plays a card that is a time. There's a time stamp on each card. It tells you what time you're going to be filling pastries, and that chooses time order. It's a really well balanced game, I think. I've been all over the board with it. I've been in last place. I've been in first place. It's a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it each time I've played. And then we played some Dice Forge. Have you ever played Dice Forge,
Rick? I have not. It looks really cool, but I think takes on some of the mechanics of Rattlebones that we've reviewed before, if I'm correct.
That's correct, yeah. So Dice Forge, I actually have a review going up for Dice Forge this week, so it'll either be published the day after this show goes live, or it'll be up on Monday, the day before. So look for it at oneboardfamily.com. Dice Forge, the theme of this is just ridiculous. You've been invited by the gods to compete in this tournament, blah 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 blah. It really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, Dice Forge is really, really fun, and the theme has nothing to do with it. You have these two dice. Each player gets two dice that you can replace the faces on the dice. And so as you go through the game, as you purchase or defeat monsters on the board, you are modifying your dice to better your odds. You know, you can put more gold on one dice, or you can put more victory points on a die, you know, things like that. It's the mechanics are really cool. I think the production value is incredible. Every time I take out the game, I'm like, man, this is how you do a game in 2017, 2018. I mean, it's just high quality, really good.
I'm going to have to get my hands on that. I love that mechanic from Rattlebones and from Dice Forge, where you're changing die faces. I don't know. There's something about that that's really cool to me, so I might have to check that one out. I'm adding it on BGG right now as a want to play.
I think I worried that the pieces would snap off eventually or it would become loose. I've played it almost a dozen times now since we received it. Actually, this was a gift from one of our Patreon donors, which is super special to us. One of the people who gives to us on Patreon and supports One Board Family, they sent us this gift, sent this Dice Forge as a gift, which is so cool. That just is really special to us. And so we got that around Christmas time, and we've played it almost a dozen times since then. But it's really fun, and it's easy enough that a non-gamer can understand, jump into it. I think it takes a little longer for a person to really figure out how to optimize their points, because you could collect a bunch of die faces and not score victory points. You know, kind of like sometimes you can have a whole hand of cards but not really go anywhere scoring wise. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels sometimes. So you have to understand how to optimize your dice and gain victory points, which is the end goal.
Gotcha. I've gotten to play two games this week that I've wanted to get to the table for a long time. The first one was Fugitive, which is a Tim Fowers two-player game that came out a little while ago. I've seen it kind of described as like a sequel to Burgle Brothers, but basically it's a two-player game where one player acts as the fugitive and one player acts as the marshal. And there are a deck of 42 location cards, and they each have a number 1 through 42. Might start at double zero, but whatever. And what you do as the fugitive is you play cards face down that represent different locations where you are, and they have to be within 3 of the previous location, or you have to play other cards to represent you sprinting to the next location. You put those down as your hideouts of where you're going to hide, and then the marshal's job is to guess what numbers you have put down, and they have like a little dry erase card that and a marker so that they can kind of cross out where you would be and kind of use their guesses to figure out where you are, and you know, can eliminate cards that you have used before, either as hideouts or as sprints, to better determine where you have headed to in the future. It seems a little complicated at first, but after our first game, Sarah and I got through it really well, and I think I really liked it. I think she liked it a lot, too. I base that assessment on the fact that she beat me 3 times. We changed roles the first 2 games, and the third game she played, I think, as the fugitive again, and she beat me every time, and it was very frustrating, but also really fun. It's a good game. I think it works really well if you enjoy deduction I think it works really well for a person that enjoys that to play the marshal's role. And then I wouldn't call it deduction on the fugitive side. It's more of a, you know, kind of bluffing, lying game. And so you're kind of getting two game experiences in one here. And just the artwork, just like every other Tim Fowers game, is amazing. It's kind of cool to see, like, location 17 has the fugitive in front of, like, this diner. And then location 18 has him, like, eating pancakes and flirting with the waitress. Then location 19 has the marshal in front of the diner. And then, like, the next card is her pointing at a stack of pancakes and, like, yelling at the waitress. So, like, it kind of tells a story through the cards that you might not be able to see based on how you end up laying out the cards, but it is kind of cool to look at.
Two players versus, I guess, how many players does this...
just two. It's only a two-player game.
Oh, it is just a two-player game. Yes. Okay, gotcha. Okay, I missed that. Sorry.
Yeah, so it plays, you know, you always have one person doing one role, one person doing the other. The marshal, I guess I could say how you win. The fugitive wins if they get to the 42nd card. So the card 42 is like their escape. And the marshal wins if at any point they have identified all of the hideouts.
Gotcha.
And so, like I said, Sarah won each time. So it is, you know, it's balanced pretty well that either person could win based on, at least I think it is. It might just be that I'm terrible at the game. so we'll keep playing. I keep asking for a rematch and she's brushed me off, but maybe I can pull off getting a rematch this evening.
Well, I think that once you've set that precedence of being the winner, I think you can't let somebody else come back in. So right. She just has to retire from playing Fugitive. Right. Now.
We may never play that game again.
Exactly. So you'll be stuck playing. Is there a solo variant? Maybe.
Maybe I can train Wrigley to pick out cards and do it.
Do it. He's smart enough. I think you just gotta maybe get him some kind of weird, like, man gloves or some kind of prosthetic, right, where his little dog paws can grab the cards.
Exactly.
I think it would work.
Exactly. And then this afternoon, morning/afternoon, went over to some new gamer friend's house and played Gloomhaven, which I had not played before. Gloomhaven, the number one game on Board Game Geek right now. Big release from last year.
Yeah.
Heavy,
yeah.
Giant monster box costs $130. So something I will never purchase for myself. And a game that definitely would not work with most of my gamer group. But two guys, Shane and Grant, that actually live a street over from me. I saw them on like an Atlanta Board Game Geek forum, like people talking about playing in this area, and noticed that they lived in Clarkston. So I sent them a message and said, hey, you know, I live in Clarkston. You know, would you guys want a game sometime? And we turned out, you know, they're definitely within walking distance of me. So went over to their house and played with their friend Zach. And it's a fairly substantial game. Kind of has a Dungeons and Dragons feel where you take on the identity of, you know, a particular role. It plays very similar to some other games that you've probably seen before. You know, I've played Arcadia Quest, which is kind of close. It's basically like defeat monsters and level up. And there's a few board games like that. But I think it has slight twists to so many mechanics that it kind of becomes its own beast. And it runs really well. It's a legacy game, so there's this map. This, like, basically it's its own board, like you'd set up for any other board game, except it's just a map to determine where you're going to go. And then it goes back in the box as you lay out the tiles that will represent the scenario that you go to. That was, I think, their 13th campaign, and they've barely scratched the surface of the game. So
yeah.
It feels like, you know, when you're playing an RPG in a video game where you're like, seeing how much of the map you've hit, and you're like, I've only just begun to play this. So we played through a scenario. It has a cool mechanic to keep it kind of even. I played, you know, obviously a new character, and their friend Zach decided he wanted to try out a new character as well. And so what it does is it adds the levels of your character together and then does a little math formulation so that the bad guys are kind of nicely balanced.
Okay.
I I never felt like overpowered or I guess underpowered, I guess, compared to the other guys. I just felt like I didn't know what I was doing quite as much, which is to be expected. But it was really cool. It has, you have a hand of nine cards, or I had a hand of nine, and they have two different actions on the top and bottom. And on your turn, you play two cards, and you take the top of one card and the bottom of another and do your actions to fight monsters, to move around the board, pick up loot and things like that. You have to, in order to get your cards back, you have to rest, and that causes you to lose one of your cards for the remainder of the game. So there ends up, and then there are some of the actions on the cards that cause you to lose that card for the rest of the game as well, because the actions are so powerful. So there's a balance that you have to find to be able to make sure you're going to make it to the end of the game. One of the players, Zach, ran out of cards, so he was he didn't make it to the end of the game. I was probably two turns away, so it was very, well done to make sure we do it. And there's a couple other mechanics. I could go on for hours because, it has a lot of rules. It has a lot of layers. If that's the kind of game that you're into, the people are not wrong. Like, it's a fun game. I would really love to play with those guys again sometime soon. And, the way the campaigns are built, like, the campaign we did ended on, like, choose this or that for your next campaign. So we're like, cliffhanger ending, and we've got to decide which mission that we're going to take on next. So it was really cool.
Did you feel like you were at a disadvantage because you hadn't played as much? I mean, obviously there's some things you're going to have to ask about and kind of figure out on your own, but do you feel like you were at much of a disadvantage having this being your first time? Did you feel like you got the mechanics, or did you kind of feel lost at times?
Well, one, I did watch a video review of the rules before I went over, and I think that was very helpful. It was about a 20-25 minute video. There were a couple things here and there that I didn't know how to do. I think my thing was like getting to know my character and getting to know how well it played. Like, my character was the scoundrel. And the scoundrel plays best when it is fighting against enemies that are isolated. And so in the way that this particular map was set up, that didn't happen all that often. So like there were a few turns where I just like, I did nothing. Like I didn't really, defeat that many enemies. I ended up being able to pull off one move where I did 21 damage to one of the bad guys, which normally you do like four. So that felt like I had accomplished something, but like the rest of the game, I didn't feel like they were having to carry the weight the whole time. I felt like I was able to, handle myself decently, but I think, my next round of the game, I think I will be tremendously more, helpful than I was in this round.
Very awesome, man. Gloomhaven is definitely a game that I want to eventually experience. I know that's we've talked about it before, that's not one that I'm going to pick up. Just, I would probably barely get it to the table. But it sounds awesome. So
And it's got a great, like I said, they've played 12 different missions. And so, but the way that it's set up, they have a ton of different characters you can be. Some of them like unlock as you go through it, but I was able to jump right in even though it was my first round, and they could play again without me if they needed to or wanted to, and then I could jump right back in on a later campaign because of the way they balance out the enemies and stuff.
That's really cool. I like that a lot. Awesome, man. Well, we will be back in just a moment. We've got an interview with Jason Kotorski from Green Couch Games talking about their newest project, Filler, which we've talked about and actually have a preview on oneboardfamily.com. It's a game that you guys will definitely want to check out that's currently on Kickstarter. Catch us on the other side of this break with that interview. All right, we are here with Jason Kotorski. How are you doing today, Jason?
I am doing well, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Good. You are the one who created Green Couch Games. You make some pretty fantastic small box games. Give us a little elevator pitch of how you got into this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I quit my punk rock band and went back to school and found myself real bored on weekends when I wasn't on the road anymore. And my wife introduced me to games, and I was like, this is a sweet hobby I can do on my own, and I loved it. And then I saw people's names on the boxes, and I was like, that's cool. I want my name on one of those boxes. So then I started making a game, and my very first design turned out okay, and it was fun. It was called the Great Heartland Holland Company, and Dice Ate Me put it out. And I just started diving deeper and deeper into the hobby and realized that I loved these little games, and thought, you know what? I think I want to start a company that focuses on little games as the main thing, because a lot of people do them, but they don't like raise them up in the way that like they exist in my heart. So I said, let's make a company that does this. And Green Couch Games was born. It started as an experiment, and 3 years later, I'm hanging with it.
You guys have done a lot in 3 years. I know Rick and I, who helps Rick and I run a lot of stuff on One Board Family. We've talked about it before, that the amount of games that you put out and the amount of times that we mention one of your games is just amazing to think about, that you've only been around for 3 years. I wanted to ask you a question first about Great Heartland Hauling Company. That game is something that one of my coworkers, Bob, he loves your game.
Awesome.
And so how did that come about? Like, was this your first time like, hey, let me try my hand at this and see what I can do?
Yeah, I mean, it really was. Like, I worked in, before I was a game publisher, I was a minister, and before I was a minister, I was in shipping and receiving at a college bookstore, so I dealt with a lot of truckers, and I was talking to a guy who was delivering food. We were doing a food giveaway at our church, and this guy was telling me about how he took this job, and how this job doesn't pay very well to bring this food up to us, but then he said the reason he took the job is because he was going to get paid to pick up some greens and take them all the way to Florida. But like, this at least paid for him to come up to Michigan, where I am.
Gotcha.
So I was like, oh, there's some give and take there. Like, and as soon as he said that sentence to me, I was like, there's a game. So then I went home and I'm like, I'm going to make a game about trucking. Something I know a little bit about because of my job experience. And I started with a deck of cards and some scissors, and I cut up some of the suit like icons from a deck of cards. And then I was using cards to make a game. And I just like physically was manipulating things until I felt like there's something I want to do here. Like, there's a game here. And then I played it with my wife, and she was into it. And she's like, this is an actual game. And I was like, all right. So then I entered it in a contest and got really good feedback. And I'm like, well, now I'm going to publish this. And she's like, no, you should go and get somebody else to try to spend money on it before you spend any of our money on it. So
yeah.
So then I pitched it to publishers and ended up signing with one publisher. And then I ended up going to a convention to work for them. But that publisher had some trouble and said I could have my game back, and met Dice Hate Me at that very same convention. And on that Monday, I got a phone call saying they wanted to do my game. And I was stoked, because they were like an up and coming indie that like I was really comfortable with. And it was a cool thing to have somebody who was super willing to work with me and tell me everything they were going to do behind the scenes for my game as a brand new game designer. They were great, and it really gave me a taste of what publishing looked like, and really kind of where this, like, hey, I think I want to do some of that too, kind of started to grow in me.
That's awesome. Well, the latest publishing venture that you are involved with is for a game called Filler that's currently on Kickstarter right now, and that's why we're talking to you. We really love Filler. It is all about filling pastries and these cute little cards. It can get pretty cutthroat in the kitchen. we have a 10-year-old Kendall who loves baking. That is her thing. So my wife got a stand mixer. I bought my wife a stand mixer for Christmas this year, and my daughter's eyes lit up. She was like, we can cook more, can't we? And I was like, this is not for you. But when I bust out Filler, you sent us a prototype, and we did a preview on One Board Family, and the game is just fantastic. It plays so well, and it's balanced really well. I think that's the most surprising part of it. I've never felt like the game anybody at the table got the shaft because they didn't do something right or got a bad card. So much of it has to do with the cards you pick up from the table and the way that you choose to fill them. So tell us a little about Filler.
Yeah, Filler is well, a game that I fell in love with instantly. So it's designed by Jonathan Schaffer, who is a designer who is local to me, which is Grand Rapids, Michigan. And when I moved here a couple of years ago from the other side of Michigan, and he helps run the Grubs, which is Grand Rapids Unpublished Board Games Society. It's a group of designers that get together every other week at a local game store, and they like test each other's games. And I noticed pretty early that Jonathan was one of the best people at teaching games and like giving feedback, like really getting down to it with helpful stuff. So I started hanging out with these guys and gals, and just like showing them some games I was working on with designers and playing their games. And one week Jonathan shows up and he's like, "Hey, I've got a game you should look at. It's called Filler and it's about 20 minutes long," which I have a podcast called The 20 Minutes of Filler. So, you know, he was certainly pandering to the audience with this design.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, I played it and I was like, well, you're right. This is certainly a game for me. It has so much of like the theme was there. The way it all played out just felt thematic and wonderful. So at its heart, it's a game of a simultaneous kind of action selection where you're choosing a time to show up to work and then managing a hand of ingredients. All your cards are multi-use cards that have times and ingredients that you have available to you. And the cards on the table are more cards with those things, but the way that you get them is fulfilling the recipe card portion of them. And you would reveal a card at the same time as everybody else. Whoever plays the earliest time is the first to show up to work. And then they use the other cards in their hand as the ingredients to kind of complete that recipe and take the new card off the table into their hand. And it's got new ingredients and new times and maybe a special ability that acts the minute that you get to take it into your hand. So it's this simultaneous action, selection, set collection. It's a hand-building game, kind of a little bit like deck building, but you're just building a smaller, kind of tight little engine. And all these cards have points on them, so there's this hinge point, kind of like in Dominion, where for a while you're trying to get the right cards in your hand, and at some point you got to make that switch to, now I'm going to get the right points in my deck, so I'm going to have the best score at the end of the game. And it just did all that so well in such a small package. And the balancing was just, you know, Jonathan being a really great designer with a great design community around him that has played that game over and over again and just systematically, you know, taking it apart and put it back together several times to just get it just right. So, yeah, really proud of that game and really glad that I get to work with Jonathan, who's a friend and who's local to my game group, and really just a guy who loves design. So yeah, and it fits so much of what we're doing with our family friendly aesthetic, with a neat theme, with a nice pun in the title. You know, you're filling pastries and it's a filler game, and that's like our bread and butter. There we go with baking and food again. But
there we go.
Yeah, I love it. So it's great.
It's a great fit. It fits right along with Best Treehouse Ever and Ladder 29. And like, when we got to play it again this weekend, we sat down and we played it. I think this was our first time playing a three-player game. We played primarily four and five players each time we've played the prototype, but we played a three-player game. And my daughter had really, really good times, really early times. So she was always getting the first thing on the table because she had just stacked her hand full of really good times. But she was missing those awards. And I was sitting there, I was like, so she's going to get first pick before me all the time. And then I really need to figure out how to get the right awards, get the bonuses and things like that. I ended up coming in last place, behind my friend Josh, and then 1 point lower than her because of a bonus. I was just like, man, why couldn't I was so upset that she was getting first pick each time, but she played really well and she gets the game. Being 10 years old, she gets the game right away. It just connects with her. So
love that. I love hearing that. Yeah, I mean, it's, you can go all day and feel like, oh yeah, I get first pick, but if you don't pick the right thing,
yeah,
then it's not going to help you in the end. So yeah, there's a lot going on. And then like the turn order of when, who's going to pick when, is really, you know, like, I know what they're going to take. And you can get into it very casually, or you can kind of take it to the level of like getting into the cutthroat side of it that you mentioned earlier, where everybody's really just going for it.
Yeah. There have been times when I've looked at other people and I've been like, I know you need this card, so I'm going to take it because I know you don't have any blueberries in your hand. So I'm going to take this from you. Let me ask you a little about Kickstarter. You guys have done, have you done all of your projects through Kickstarter or the majority of them?
Yeah, we have done all of our games through Kickstarter at this point. Yeah. And we're on, okay. Filler, I believe, is our 10th game that we brought to Excellent. Kickstarter in 3 years. So. Yep.
So, for these smaller games, for these smaller box games, these family-friendly filler games, is Kickstarter becoming even more of an avenue for this to hit? Because I think about Kickstarter a couple years ago, when we started One Board Family, we were really hesitant about sharing Kickstarter projects when we first started, because I think your average family may not. Somebody who's just getting into gaming may not know a lot about Kickstarter, and there may be some hesitancy there. I remember talking to somebody probably about 2-3 years ago about Kickstarter, and they said, well, I'm afraid I'll lose my money. And Kickstarter has changed so drastically over the years, and it's no longer this concern like, will this pan out? But groups like yours, publishers like yours, have shown that you can put out an amazing product on Kickstarter and it'll be fulfilled. So why does Kickstarter work for these family-friendly games? And if there's a person out there listening saying, you know what, I haven't jumped on Kickstarter bandwagon yet, what would you say to them to kind of give them some confidence to back a game now?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I do have a challenge bringing these family-friendly games to Kickstarter, because it is a hobby space. The games that are hitting those like high numbers with backers and money are often those big games with lots of content and bells and whistles and miniatures and like heavier kind of meatier games where there's a lot of stuff going on, because the hobby people know they have this stuff on their radar. They love games. And then you look at a game like mine where it's $15 to get into it on Kickstarter, you know, or 19 maybe. It takes a lot of backers to get to that goal when you're only charging $15 to $20 per, yeah. you know, per game. So you've got to have a lot more backers than you do if you're going for the same level of a goal at, you know, $40 or $50.
That's true.
So it takes a lot, and I think the good thing is the gamers love games, and I think I've been around long enough to kind of let people know like that I'm doing games that are kind of work for gamer fillers, but also are good for families and casual players. And us as gamers, I think we are evangelists that want to bring people in. So those little attractive, kind of fun themed light games that still have meaningful decisions in them are good, because that's what we're going to be using to bring new people into the fold. But there's only so many things I can add to a card game to get people really excited on Kickstarter, like as far as stretch goals. And those are things that really drive like backers to get excited about a project early on. And I do have people coming in that are more of just family gamers who are just like, yeah, we want to get a simple card game. And like $15-$20 is not so much that I can't like take a chance on this thing. They might balk at a game that's like, you know, an $80 big box game, because they're like, that's a lot of money to throw away if it doesn't come through. But with me, they can take a little bit of a chance. So there's that side of it too. I think that it really helps us just to get the game to a core group of people that already are into what we're doing. And then the secondary part of it is that like it allows me to get those games into the retail market afterwards that is going to reach a wider audience as well. And that's where it's going to reach more of the casual people who are not, you know, as hobby oriented. So I'm really grateful for like the hobby community that helps me get things funded. And then for it also allowing me to get the game out to other people who will find it in the other avenues, because without Kickstarter, I wouldn't. The cash flow in this industry is so strange, where you have to pay out a whole bunch of money at once, and it takes 6 months before you're going to see any return on selling that game. Having all that money tied up for a long time is a tough way to run a business. And that's one of the reasons I've done so many games, because I have to have, like, while one is being printed and I'm sitting there waiting, I can't wait 6 months. I got to get the next thing going. So I always have a game, like, getting ready for Kickstarter, then maybe on Kickstarter, maybe on the boat from the factory coming to get ready for fulfillment while another one is, you know, getting printed. So it's kind of this, like, machine I'm trying to build to keep things, you know, in the pipeline all the time to keep me moving forward and keeping our brand or whatever relevant.
Well, Green Couch Games is definitely relevant, especially around our family and the people that I know. If you guys have not checked out Filler, which is currently on Kickstarter, you can go to the link in the show notes below and check out this game. We also have a full preview on oneboardfamily.com. Be sure to check out Filler. It is a game that you definitely want to get your hands on. So, Jason, thanks so much for taking time for us and our audience. We are greatly appreciative.
Well, I appreciate you having me on and sharing what you do. I love people who are interested in bringing families together around the game table.
Now paging the Game Doctor. Game Doctor, please report to room 101.
All right, folks, welcome back, and we're scrubbing in as the Game Doctor. I mean, Ryan, of course, is needing a real doctor right now, it sounds like. But, you know, until then, though, he stays true to his occupation. And yeah, he will not rest until you are cured of your gaming ills.
Actually, that brings up a good point. What happens when doctors get sick?
I don't know, man. Can you treat yourself? I know you can't, like, write your own prescriptions. So is it kind of like what hairstylists do when they need a haircut?
Yeah, I guess you see, this is the thing. I want to go to the doctor that the doctors go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that I got to find out where the doctors go, cuz that's where I want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the hairstylist thing, like, I feel like a lot of hairstylists I've seen, I'm like, "Ooh, I don't like your hair." And it's like going to a dentist with, like, bad teeth.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
I don't know if I trust this to be a thing that happens to me right now.
Yeah, if you've got a jacked up grill and you're practicing dentistry, there is something wrong.
Indeed. Okay. Well, those have nothing to do with what our game doctor is today. But Ryan, can you introduce our patient, please?
Or yes, at least so their ills. Our patient has written us. We do not have a name for this patient, but basically, this patient is looking for a game for a birthday. Would like to give this game as a birthday gift to a 12-year-old boy to replace video games. Something that the kid will enjoy. Something that kind of scratches that video game itch that a 12-year-old boy might have. Because I have a 12-year-old son, this was not a hard list to come up with. No. And so,
yeah, next time we'll just make Josiah jump over here and do it.
That's true. Why is he not talking into this microphone? Yeah, anyway, so Rick, why don't you give us a couple?
Well, I think, you know, there's kind of two ways to approach this. You know, there are games, of course, that we think that 12-year-old boys would enjoy. And then there are, you know, games that are kind of have a video game feel to them that we think would work well with someone in that age range. One of them is a game that we got our hands on not that long ago, and that is Looney Quest. We've talked about that game a couple times, Ryan. I don't think I would qualify it as a dexterity game. It's really kind of in a realm of its own.
Yeah.
But it involves taking a clear piece of plastic, drawing based on a map that you put in the center of the table, and all the players from their angle draw a map or some sort of outline that allows them to meet the criteria of that particular level, whether it be navigating a series of obstacles or putting dots on enemies or circling things that you're trying to collect, and then you get points. And the whole thing is split up into worlds and levels. So kind of a video game thing there. There's also a part where if you find certain little pixies in the background of the level and you manage to draw over them, that you get to go to a bonus level, which gets you even more points.
Yeah.
So that definitely kind of gets you that video game vibe. Yeah. Have you been able to play that one yet, Ryan?
I have not. We need to play it next time we get together, because you've got a copy of it, and I definitely want to check it out, because all the artwork reminds me of, you know, a platformer, like, just really cool-looking artwork. So that would definitely help with that video game vibe if you're looking for something for a 12-year-old boy. I would throw Adrenaline in there. So if you've got somebody who is into first-person shooters or really digs games that have kind of that Doom feel or Unreal, that sort of feel, Adrenaline is a really good one. Adrenaline, you have actually, Rick and I played this along with Aaron at a couple years ago, right after it came out, about a year and a half ago. And so you are running around the inside of this building and you're smashing each other up, shooting each other. It's really cool. The game balances really well because if somebody is being shot a lot, let's say somebody is just getting raked over the coals and blasted all over the place, hit with a sledgehammer, stuff like that, that person becomes a less valuable target to hit. So you have to actually go after other players. So it balances out really well. And I think that that would scratch that itch for a kid who's into first player, FPS, games. I think that would be a good one to, look into.
Definitely. Yeah. You and I and Aaron actually played that at Gamerama together. If I remember correctly, or Atlanta Game Fest, and that was a really fun one. You know, it kind of does a nice job to me of combining board games and video games where it's not too heavily sitting in one or the other.
Yep.
But yeah, it's fun.
We've talked about a couple of these other ones. Clank, we've shared about Clank in the past, one of our favorite deck builders. Clank is really, if you've got a kid who's really into adventuring, kind of, you know, that diving into the dungeon type of gamer, Clank would be a good fit. Hero Realms is a good deck builder, that one. That's a really fun one. In fact, me and my son played Hero Realms earlier today. He sat down and he said, "Dad, can we play Hero Realms?" I was like, "Yeah, of course." He beat me pretty well. I mean, he beat me by 20-something points.
But you're sick. Yeah, it totally wouldn't happen otherwise.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sick, so, you know, I can't play board games. But yeah, Hero Realms is a great choice, and it's pretty cost efficient, I guess. About 18 to 20 bucks, and up to 4 players can play it. And then Werewolf, that's another one that we've talked about quite a bit. Werewolf, the social deduction game. We just had a birthday party for a friend of ours. She's 14. She turned 14 years old, and she doesn't like she doesn't like board games, but she wanted to play Werewolf. So we all sat around and played Werewolf, and so that was a big hit. And it seems like we've met more kids that are great with playing Werewolf than that won't like other board games. So that's a really good gateway game.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got that technology element. Like, if you're wanting to completely, well, I don't know that you have to like see it as getting away from technology. I still think you're doing that. It's just that it, instead of forcing somebody to be like the game director, it's a phone that does it for you. So I think it's definitely, works really well. Any others, Ryan, that we've hit before that you think would be good before we hit some more kind of original games?
Yeah, well, we've talked about King of Tokyo before, but I think just that age range of a 12-year-old boy just smashing stuff and having fun and talking smack, King of Tokyo would be a really good one. It's easy to learn, and if you know this kid, whether it's a nephew or whatever, this would be a good game to, you know, keep on the shelf. I mean, I've played with kids as young as 7 years old, and I've played with people as old as 60-something playing King of Tokyo, and that's been a really, really big hit. So you actually have one that you own on this list also.
Yeah, Ryan, Smash Up is one that I've got my hands on, and I know you've got a copy as well. A game that I don't get to play nearly as much as I want, but I think works really well for a younger audience. Smash Up has you putting together two factions based on groups that you might not normally see hanging out together. So you might have a deck that includes ghosts and zombies. So you might put those together, or dinosaurs and robots. So you take the two decks and you shuffle them together, and that will be your team for that particular round or that particular game. And so what you will do is you'll you'll have your own hand and you'll play different cards on bases that are laid out for all players, and you're trying to get the attack number at the total attack at the base to be greater than the base's number so that it breaks, and then that you get victory points based on first, second, and third place at that base. It's really fun. It can be kind of difficult for new players because there are lots of different types of cards, so it requires a person to learn kind of what's going on with them. But if you if you're a person that can kind of pick up on those pretty quickly, it can be fun. I think another part of it that really might appeal to this age range is the number of expansions for the game. So just this idea of almost a collect them all kind of approach to the game, where there's so many different combinations that you could do, I think would be really fun. I mean, that of course means that you're having to learn new rules each time, but I think it's a pretty fun little experiment. Smash Up is a game that I have actually gotten custom printed.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Fan-based cards for it before, and I actually traded away that game and then got another copy of Smash Up because I was like, I really want people to like this game and play it with me because it's so fun, in my opinion.
That's funny. Yeah. We've got Smash Up and we've got two expansions with it. We've got the Pretty Pretty Princess pack, which is like princesses, fairies, unicorns, and kittens. And then we have the fantasy one, which is characters from Star Wars and Star Trek, and just ridiculous characters. So it's crazy. It's a cool game, and I think a kid who's 12 years old would really, really dig that. And then our last one, Terror in Meeple City, we've talked about. You own the original copy called Rampage,
right?
And Terror in Meeple City is basically the rebranding of Rampage. If this 12-year-old boy is into dexterity games, I know Josiah loved playing your copy of Rampage. We really had a lot of fun with it. You're a dinosaur running around a city trying to destroy all these different buildings and collect as many meeples as possible, trying to collect sets of meeples to score bonuses. This one's a really fun one. If the kid is into dexterity games, this would be a good pick for a 12-year-old boy. I think that it would be a game that they wouldn't quickly outgrow. It's kind of, feels kind of kiddish, but at the same time, I think smashing stuff and throwing things across the board is a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, the game has a fairly, I wouldn't call it complex scoring system, but it's a little more complex than you might expect with the game. Like, there's different colored meeples that your monster is devouring. You can lose, like, teeth as a monster, which impacts your ability to eat people and things like that. I do think that it's possible to house rule this, so it's just essentially like, because what you do is build up the board, like there are buildings made of meeples, like they have cardboard floors, but then you put a meeple on each corner of that floor and then stack another floor on top of it, so that when you smash the buildings, like the people go everywhere and you eat them and stuff like that. And it's funny, I think you could house rule it to make it simple and just like all about the chaos and the crazy madness that's involved. But yeah, I think that's a pretty fun one. I think it's something, it takes a pretty long time to set up, so go ahead and be prepared for that. Like, don't call the kid in there to start playing until you have officially set it up, because they're going to be bored by the time the board's ready.
That's true.
But it's a fun one, I think, especially if that kid loves dexterity games.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a good board game for a 12-year-old boy who is into some different video games, check out some of these games. Look them up on Board Game Geek. You can check them out at your local hobby shop and see if they're a good fit for this kid that you're buying a birthday gift for. So, hey, Rick, good job. Good job, Doctor.
Well, nice job, Doctor. Yes, we did. I think we did a very good job on this one.
That's good. Hopefully we've earned our doctor bonuses. Is that how doctors get paid?
Yes. If you cure somebody, you get a certain amount. And if you if they die, you get less.
Ah, gotcha. See, I'm glad you're here to explain all these things, because yep. I don't know these things.
Yep, I learned it from television, probably.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that'll be just about do it. You can find One Board Family at oneboardfamily.com. You can find us on Twitter at One Board Family, Instagram at the same location at One Board Family, and then on Facebook at One Board Family. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel. My kids were just telling me before we jumped on this podcast about how much they loved Rick's review of Camel Up. He did a video review for Camel Up on our YouTube channel, and the kids were just laughing out loud watching it earlier today. So be sure to check that out.
Yes, thank you, Ryan. I'm glad your kids love my humor. I need somebody to tell me that I'm worthy of making these videos. So thank you. And until next time, Ryan, we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.